Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good evening, everybody here from Chicago. In this podcast, in today's segment, we will be interviewing Mr. Andrew Scheer of Bloomfield Networks, based out of New Jersey. They're a rather large, IT provider, MSP, if you will. Andrew, thank you for joining us today, and thank you for your time.
Thank you, Robbie. I'm happy to be here.
Thank you. Well, tell us about your career and how you got started in security or cybersecurity, should I say?
Yeah, cybersecurity and, just general IT services. I've been working with computers my whole life. My dad before me was a network administrator. So, practically since coming out of the womb, I've been exposed to computers and, different technology. But I think I'm very fortunate because it's just something that I've always been interested in. I never really had a phase where I had to figure out what I wanted to do with my life. It was always, driven by computers before I started my business.
Okay, cool. What are some of the highlights of your career? Would you like to elaborate on some of that? Yeah.
So, we've done a lot of really cool stuff. We've worked on, for example, a project with a major architectural client that, had seismic, vibration sensors that communicated over a cellular network, and each of the different devices was given a public IP address, and, everything being IPv4, the cell provider wanted their IPs back, so we orchestrated a move to set up a site-to-site VPN tunnel to the client's office and a VPN with the cell provider, and then got all those devices converted to a NAT setup, which was really cool and really unique. Some other things we've done are, we've been a support for integrating the technology on large, companies that have been acquired by public companies and helping to get them up to standard, and things like that. Those are some things that are, kind of stand out and we're proud of.
Oh, cool. Awesome. Now, I got kind of backtrack a little bit. I got started in IT back in the early 90s. You're right, when the dot-com craze was, picking up, and, on CNBC, the NASDAQ was hitting new highs in the financial markets. And I think one of the biggest slogans was from Sun Microsystems, "We're the dot and dot-com." I don't know if you remember all that or not. But what are some of the What are some of the most significant developments that you've seen, during your career, evolving from the dot-com craze to what we see now, with the AWS and Microsoft Azure?
I think, honestly, the two biggest things I could think of would be the shift from the whole paradigm of perimeter-based security, where you have, you have a branch firewall and you use that to protect everything behind it, to, with COVID and remote work and, the needs of modern businesses really shifting to what needs to be a zero trust framework that, the office could really be anywhere. It could be a coffee shop. It could be a library. It could be a hotel. It could be a home. And, it's just not practical to, secure each of those locations with a physical appliance. So the times have to change to support that zero trust model. I think, maybe in addition to that, the idea that traditionally you would have data centers, filled with racks of servers to, do the different things that your organization needs, with the shift to cloud, that paradigm shift changes to, microservices and, only running for exactly what you need, instead of, having that large overhead and capital expense of running the data center.
Okay, cool. Now, before the show started, we were talking about the zero trust and the perimeter defense model. What are your thoughts on that, the zero trust? Have you started implementing that for your clients, or have they asked about it, or what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so, we've definitely started rolling out that methodology because, COVID has put everybody into a work-from-home situation, but it doesn't make the need for security any less important or, needing to be adapted to. So we've rolled out systems like Total and Cloudflare One to secure the endpoint and enforce that zero trust
Okay, cool. Now let's go back to your company and Bloomfield Networks. How did you, now you're the founder, obviously. Now, how did you start this company? What was your motivating factor behind it?
I started the company when I was pretty young, actually. It's crazy to think about. I started it in when I was 24. And, you know, that was after having about 6 years of experience working at different IT managed service providers and, you know, different technical firms, you know, usually in a support role. And I just felt that a lot of MSPs, you know, are not organized, right? Things aren't documented well, and there's not good standards. And I just felt that I had to try and do it the way that I thought it needed to be done. And, you know, we're still here, so I'm glad that I did.
Yeah. Now, how do you get the name Bloomfield Networks? That's a very unique name.
Yeah, well, so I started the company when I lived in Bloomfield, New Jersey. It's a little embarrassing. I was never good at naming anything. I try to focus more on the computers, but I lived in Bloomfield, and we worked on computer networks, so we stuck with that.
Okay, excellent. Now, do you have any expansion plans for your company? How big, how many employees do you have? Do you have offices nationally or globally? Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, so we have offices in New Jersey, and we're, you know, looking to possibly get into New York. And, we're currently three technicians, and we're looking to add another in the near term.
Okay, excellent. Now, tell us about your product services. I'm at your website right now, and I think you've got a lot of interesting things here, like consulting, VoIP. VoIP's kind of one of those really old, I guess, technology terms, right? And then compliance, BI.
I'd be happy to speak about that. Very early in my career, even before starting, you know, in a proper help desk role, I actually worked for a hosted voice provider, you know, and kind of cut my teeth on supporting Asterisk-based systems and, Yealink phones and Polycom phones. And, you know, I always kind of kept a part of that with me. And the VoIP consulting service that we offer, you know, it's really for those companies that are, you know, they're migrating off of that on-premise system from, you know, 15, 20 years ago. Or, you know, what we're seeing a lot of now is these companies that have either alarm systems or elevator phones that, you know, need to now go through and convert those analog lines that aren't supported anymore to a cellular solution. And it all needs to be organized and, you know, kind of go off without a hitch.
Okay, excellent. Do you have any customer success stories you'd like to talk about or any case studies?
So I think customer success story, I could say, you know, we work with a, you know, pretty prominent New York City law firm, and we were able to implement the lien law billing system for them. And that, you know, really created a lot of efficiencies and, you know, almost completely automated the compensation calculations every month for the different attorneys who, you know, do work with them. You know, another recent one is, you know, just in the, you know, in the tech and development space, you know, there was a Amazon Web Services account that we needed to access. It was hosting some critical services, but the employee who set it up was no longer with the company and had multi-factor authentication tied to their phone number, which they also didn't own anymore. So we were able to, kind of go backwards and figure out who was it that had the phone number, what carrier, and, you know, submit a port order and, you know, pull it in and get access to that MFA because, you know, AWS just wasn't cooperating with us to release the account. So that's, that was kind of a unique one that we're really proud of.
Okay, excellent. Do you have any others you'd like to tell us about?
I really rack my brain. I'm sure I could come up with one. We're going through to in the scope and discovery phases of, you know, putting in a 30 camera CCTV system for a church that was built in the 1800s. So a lot of, you know, building logistics and, you know, figuring out how to tie all that in is maybe another good example.
Okay, excellent. Now, in your CCTV cameras, are you deploying anything like computer vision or facial recognition in them also?
Yeah, so some of the systems, you know, you're starting to see it more and more on the higher end ones. You know, they'll have some built-in, you know, license plate recognition or face recognition, and you know, the NVR has the ability to store the you know, the images and recognize faces and stuff. So it's not, you know, really hit the smaller markets yet, but it's really interesting tech when we get to play with it.
Cool, excellent. Now you're talking about AWS and all that. Now, cloud is one of my favorite topics to talk about here. Do you do cloud deployments for your clients or cloud consulting?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, that could range from things like, you know, we have an AWS account and we want to make sure that our security groups and our policies are all, you know, up to grade, or it could be something like, you know, that we want to, we have our on-premises data center and we want to move it, you know, move it to the cloud and shut that data center down. And, you know, one of the things that you have to think about when you're doing something like that is that, you know, a lot of people maybe who don't know, you know, they'll say, I want to lift and shift, right? I want to go one-to-one. Whatever I have on site, I'll have in the cloud. And, you know, that's, you know, if not done properly, that can be a really fast way to just get a runaway AWS bill every month. You know, people need to come in and look at everything objectively and say, you know, what is this service that we're running in the data center? And, you know, could we make it into, for example, an AWS Lambda function with a piece of code that would, you know, loop and do whatever task we needed to do? Or do we truly need, you know, a dedicated 24/7 compute resource, you know, like a web server or something like that to run in our cloud environment?
Okay. Now, do you have a favorite? Is it the AWS or Azure? What's really better for the small business? There's a lot of debate on that right now. There's a lot of competition, obviously. What's your opinion on that?
Yeah, there sure is. I think it really depends. I think AWS is definitely a huge player in the space, but if you're if you're an Office 365 shop, you know, depending on what you're doing, it may make sense to look at Azure. And if you're you know, a software development shop, you know, AWS might make more sense. It really comes down to the use case.
Okay, cool, excellent. Now, as you know, we've been faced with a lot of challenges here worldwide, especially here in the U.S. You know, we've had COVID-19. Now we got, you know, inflation fears and all that. What are some of the biggest challenges facing, in your opinion, the IT industry today?
I think that comes down to the challenges that, you know, the small business owners face, right? Because, you know, there's all these rapid requirements and security things that, you know, are all very important and needed. But it's this unprecedented increase in IT spending that, you know, businesses never used to really have before, right? So, you know, a small 10-person law firm, you know, who's been in business for 30 years may have spent close to nothing on IT. But, you know, now with, you know, business email compromise and ransomware, there's a, you know, almost a certain baseline of spending that they need to have just to maintain some, you know, just to be able to sleep at night, really. And that challenge translates into, you know, us as the provider needing to have creative ways to deliver those services that they need in a cost-effective way as best we can.
Okay, excellent. Yeah, in the world of cyber, and I'm sure just in the world of IT in general, there's so many new things that are happening right now. You know, there's new technical jargons being thrown out, this and that. How do you keep up with all this stuff? I specialize more in the cyber realm of things, and it's hard for me to try to keep up with what's been going on. But how do you keep up, you know, having your own company?
It's a great question. It's very challenging, but, you know, I'm a big fan of you know, the different, on reddit.com, the different subreddits that there are for, you know, for IT MSPs, for system administration and stuff like that. You know, those have just been a wealth of information for, you know, up and coming things and reading articles there. And outside of that, you know, just following the different vendors that we like, right? You know, Microsoft and what they're coming out with to see what's out there.
Okay, excellent. Now, in the cyber world, you know, there's a huge job. I mean, there's a huge shortage of workers, and, you know, people are trying to crack into the field. What advice do you have for people that are starting out in IT or even they want to get a cybersecurity or maybe do their own consulting gig? What kind of advice can you give them?
I think, you know, the best advice I could give would be to start with a managed service provider. And some of them get a bad rep just because of the, you know, the business model of, you know, multiple clients, multiple environments, and, you know, churning out tickets. But that is the single fastest way to get a bunch of exposure to different tech, different businesses, different people, and really, you know, build up a, you know, pretty robust skill set quickly. I mean, you know, looking at myself, right, I was working in the space for 6 years before I started my, you know, company. And that was coupled with it being a lifelong, you know, pursuit of mine. But, you know, to go from, you know, graduating college to owning your own business in, you know, 5-6 years, I think is a pretty good testament to the fact that, you know, working in a support role and a, you know, MSP role really does, you know, help you develop the skills very quickly. And in addition to that, I think to always be, you know, always be willing to learn, always be willing to try new things and, you know, have a home lab at home, right? And if that's not obvious what that means, that just means, you know, you can get very affordably a, you know, a used server, and you could set up VMware or Hyper-V and, you know, run, you know, and play with it, right? And figure out how to, you know, make the different things work in a no pressure environment, you know, to better your skills.
Yeah. As I've mentioned before, earlier in this podcast, I'd say when I first started out, I was started out with Windows 3.1 and the Macintosh Classics. Now we're up to the point now where Metaverse and Web 3.0, now we can deploy, you know, like a Windows data center server for just literally pennies on a dollar, you know, for what it would have cost like maybe 20 years ago. How do you see the role of IT? In fact, even throwing your 2 cents about cybersecurity, how's this all getting evolved in the next few years? I mean, it's just everything's all virtual now. What are your thoughts on that?
Right. Well, you know, I think it's going to be an interesting in the coming years. I think you'll see more and more, you know, people that are using portable computers as we already are, you know, rather than those fixed workstations, you know, outside of the really intense cases that need it, like for CAD or, you know, things like that. But even then, you know, the new Apple Silicon, you know, ARM architecture, when Windows catches up to ARM, I think, you know, that physical architecture will, you know, we'll see you know, less bands and less power requirements to do the same thing that you used to do in a portable way. So I think that, you know, that is going to be one of the biggest changes I'll expect to see.
Yeah, excellent. Now, businesses today are obviously, you know, they're very cost conscious, as we had mentioned about, you know, the fear of inflation and the way the financial markets are really kind of taking turmoil right now. Like for an SMB especially, what are some of the considerations they should take into consideration when they want to deploy new IT systems or new cyber tools?
I think, you know, to look at the credibility of, you know, whatever tool is being deployed, right? So, you know, if it's some, you know, something no one's heard of, or if it's a, you know, a Microsoft solution that everybody knows and can support, you know, but also, you know, not just with a cyber tool, but with any tool, right? To really evaluate, you know, how easy is it to get in with a company and how hard is it to get out? You know, if you deploy a solution, will it be something that's totally integrated into everything that you do, or, you know, can you unwind it without too much struggle if you don't end up liking it, or, you know, can't stay, you know, if they raise their prices or something like that and you need to change.
Okay, excellent. Now, 3 years ago, or what was it, 4 years ago in 2019, you know, COVID-19 was just starting to make the headlines. In China, nobody thought it would wreak havoc around the world that it has right now. You know, unfortunately, a lot of bad things have happened from that, but there have been some good things too. You know, like we've seen vaccines come out like in 6 months, and now we've seen a remote workforce, you know, evolve, which to 99%, you know, remote workforce, And nobody thought this would happen until like 4 or 5 years down the road here. But what's your opinion? How do you think this pandemic has impacted the IT industry? And what do you think is going to happen in the next 4 or 5 years?
I think, you know, it's impacted the IT industry in a big way, right? Because the, you know, the IT industry is what, you know, allowed that pivot to remote work to happen in the way that it did. And a lot of it was, you know, on the backs of, you know, the IT teams that were doing the best that they could and still got it done with, you know, limited budget and limited time. So, you know, I think that dependence on, you know, on IT for remote work will, you know, will only continue. And, you know, what I hope to see is that, you know, in all the different parts of the America that we'll see, you know, fiber to the home is something that is available and affordable, as there's still, you know, a lot of areas that you just can't get good quality internet for a good price any, you know, at all.
Okay. How did COVID impact your business and your clients? I mean, when everybody was first asked to work from home, you know, there's a lot of issues, you know, a lot of companies couldn't give up, you know, company issued devices. So people were using personal devices. There was, you know, the intermeshing of home networks with the corporate networks and a lot of security issues with that. How did you manage all that?
Well, you know, we were pretty fortunate because, you know, our companies were that we worked for, you know, they were set up with, you know, standardized firewalls, SSL VPN, and, you know, all of that. So the transition to, you know, send these people home and, you know, have them still be able to access the on-prem network attached storage or on-prem servers, you know, fortunately wasn't too painful. But, you know, as time progressed, we've, you know, kind of matured even more and started to enforce, you know, Office 365 conditional access. So, you know, you can only log in from your personal device or from approved devices and locations and whatnot. So, you know, that's definitely been a big thing for us.
Okay, excellent. Now, what are your predictions for emerging technologies or trends that we should, you know, that as a society that we should pay to and, you know, pay attention to in general? And if you want to throw in your, you know, your 2 cents on the cybersecurity realm too, that'd be great also.
Yeah, so, you know, I mean, I think obviously ChatGPT is, you know, made a bunch of headlines in the past few months, and, you know, it's only a sign of what's to come, right? So I think we'll get to a point where, you know, you might call a customer service line and you won't even know if you're really talking to a person or not. And, you know, we don't need to get into whether that's a good idea or a bad idea, but it's definitely a change that I see, you know, in the pipeline. And you know, and we have to also, you know, see how that's going to affect the workforce, right? And, you know, if it's going to automate away jobs or if it's going to, you know, be a support to, you know, people in those positions.
Yeah. Well, that brings up another issue I was going to talk to here about in a few minutes, but I'll bring it up now. That's of artificial intelligence and this ChatGPT thing. Now, I wrote a little blog, you know, about it. And I wrote a book on AI a couple of years ago. Do you use AI? What are your thoughts on artificial intelligence? And what do you think about ChatGPT? Because I've heard both sides of the fence. It's a great tool. And I heard people say that it's another way of creating more malware and blah, blah, blah. What are your thoughts on all that?
Right. Well, it's going to create some really interesting problems, right? I think it may have been NIST or some other government body, you know, recently published a paper on, you know, the artificial intelligence risk management framework. Because, you know, now we're starting to have questions like, if a corporation relies on AI to make a decision, then, you know, from a governance perspective, who's responsible for that decision? And how does all that work? So it's definitely going to be an interesting evolution, you know, over the next 5 to 10 years.
Okay, excellent. Do you use AI for any of your services or products?
No, not directly. You know, we've started to mess with ChatGPT for things like, you know, if we want to write an article on the website just to get a, you know, just to get an outline of, you know, what we could do. But just, you know, only in a really, you know, high level look at, you know, what the tech is capable of and you know, also what it can't do.
Okay, excellent. Now, as an IT provider of today and your service that you're offering right now, what do you think you're going to be offering different or maybe more enhanced down in the future?
I think that in the future, it will only iterate on the cybersecurity policies, right? Fine-tuning things and making tweaks to what's allowed and not allowed and all of that. I think just the continuing evolution of policies will be big. And then, also we're constantly looking at how we deliver service, right? So, that we have a ticketing system that maybe uses AI to sort tickets and classify them by priority to, get people the adequate response time that they need.
Okay. All right, cool. Now, just a couple of other things I want to talk about here as we segue into the last part of the show here. One of them is the Internet of Things. That's where everything's all connected together. But I find the proposition of that to be very scary. I mean, I don't have a smart home or a smart car. I still have like an old Honda Civic 03, all, old analog instrumentation. What are your thoughts on the IoT? Do you have a smart home or a smart car? What are your thoughts on that?
I've dabbled in it a little bit, right? And that just means Philips Hue, remote controlled lighting, and that's handy because if you're in your bed and you forget to turn the lights off in another room, super convenient. You can just turn it off from your phone. But I think in a lot of ways, right, the IoT concept that everything's connected, that everything has an IP address and can communicate. In a lot of ways, it's like COVID, right? That we had we had a society that had become so interconnected that when COVID came, it was able to to spread, and now we're no different. So I think you'll see a lot of IoT startups move very quickly and get products to market, and then the security will come second, and you'll see a big wave of IoT, cybersecurity as a, as a service, and different levels of auditing required. Honestly, I think the next thing in the pipeline is going to have to be, I hope it is, right, some baseline requirements for cybersecurity, from the federal government and, grants for small businesses to deploy things like that. Otherwise, I think that's exactly what'll happen.
Yeah, I think Biden actually just came out recently about what that national security strategy, I think. Are you aware of that, or what are your
Yes,
thoughts on
yes,
that?
I yes, yeah. It's a kind of a big back and forth, right? Because at what point is if you're if your hospitals and your critical infrastructure is vulnerable to an attack that can come in by an email, right? Then we should definitely be doing something about that at the policy level.
Okay, excellent. Now, cybersecurity insurance is also very much a hot button topic, especially for the SMBs. Have you dealt with cyber insurance? Do you offer that, or have your clients ask you about
Yeah,
that?
yeah. So, we've had clients ask, and we've recommended both to our clients. And the biggest thing I could say about that is that the questionnaires, right, something I've seen, maybe as recent as 4 or 5 years ago, the questionnaires for cyber insurance were so basic, right? They'd say, do you use Windows 7 or greater and turn on automatic updates? But now, the questionnaires are a total minefield, right? You really need to be qualified to even answer them. And, they're asking you if you use multi-factor authentication on your wireless access points or your switches, and if you have, endpoint detection and response. And, most business owners filling these things out, probably have no idea. So, the biggest takeaway from that question, I think, is if you're in a position where you don't have cyber insurance, you should get it. And if you're given a questionnaire, you should, have a qualified IT person fill it out and make sure that if you don't have the things that you need, that you get them and get them implemented correctly. There's been new cases in the courts. I think Travelers may have been the insurance company this happened with, but someone just filled out the questionnaire and didn't fill it out honestly. And then unfortunately there was a ransomware incident and a big claim, and now they're looking to avoid the policy and not pay, and obviously that business is in trouble. So just to fill those questionnaires out honestly and accurately.
Yeah. Have you helped your clients fill out these questionnaires or?
Yes. Yeah. All the time. It'll be either cybersecurity questionnaires for the liability insurance or third party vendor auditing. You know, if you're working with a Fortune 500 and they have a robust vendor onboarding process to get through programs like that.
Okay. Excellent. Now, the one other topic I want to talk to you about are data privacy laws like CCPA, GDPR, HIPAA. I mean, there are a lot of states coming up with their own data privacy laws, or countries all over the world coming up with their own version. And now there's call for having something that's more standard, more uniform at the federal level. Have you dealt with this for your clients? Do you do compliance checks for your clients also? What are your thoughts on all this?
Yeah. Yeah, so I think that's something we're only going to see more of, right? There's going to be more data privacy laws in different places, and it's a lot to keep up with. So I think small businesses, similar to my comment earlier in the show, this is something they never really had to think about. But making sure even if you do something as simple as a newsletter that everybody's opted in, correctly, and you're not sending spam or using data in a way that you're not, permitted to do.
Okay, excellent. Now, one other thing I want to talk to you about finally before we wrap up the show is about cloud security. The AWS did the notorious for S3 bucket, leakages, and Azure, they've had their own faults. So right now the big fear is, data leakages. A lot of people or companies are now getting out of the public and private clouds. Then now they're moving to the hybrid cloud infrastructure or that kind of deployment. And there's a lot of data exfiltration that's going to happen from that. Have you had those kind of issues that you've dealt with, or what are your thoughts on that?
It typically comes down to policy, right? So, you want to make sure if you're setting up your S3 buckets that they're done, that all that's configured up to correctly, of course. But the interesting thing is with the cloud deployments, it could normally be set up by programmers or DevOps people who of course aren't cybersecurity people. So I think the biggest takeaway from that question is if you're contemplating a cloud deployment and you don't have an in-house security team or CISO, that you really should not just leave it to the developers. You should also, make sure that someone who is familiar with cybersecurity best practices is looking over security groups and permissions and things like that, and making sure that you're limiting any risk on that type of security issue.
Okay, excellent. Well, Andrew, we thank you for your time this evening for the podcast. We hope to have you again.
Of course, thank you.
For the final question, what's the best way for people to contact you? Suppose somebody's listening to this podcast, they want your services, or just to have general questions. What's the best way for them to reach out to you?
Yeah, so if you go to our website, bloomfieldnetworks.com, we have a contact form, we have a Calendly booking link. Happy to talk to anybody, especially a listener of the podcast, to help out and answer any questions. And you'll see on the bottom of the website, we have an email address there, info@bloomfieldnetworks.com. That'll, hit a distribution list that goes to me. That would be the best way.
Okay. Well, Andrew, thanks for your time again. Have a great evening, and we hope to have you again here in the near future, okay?
Awesome. All right. Well, thank you. Glad to be here.
Thanks, Stanley.